This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqarah, recited by Ali Parhiskar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of the grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every ear. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing. As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Here's a look at our top stories this hour. A fresh escalation between Israel and Palestinian resistance forces in Gaza hours after the U.S. president leaves the occupied territories. Yemen's Ansar Allah says Biden's visit to the region is meant to speed up normalization between Israel and Saudi Arabia, calling on Muslim nations to react. Also ahead, Tehran says it's disappointed by the UN special rapporteur welcoming the life sentence handed to an Iranian citizen in Sweden based on false allegations. Thank you for joining us. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has reacted to the latest Israeli airstrikes in the Gaza Strip, calling them another crime committed against Palestinians. Hamas' spokesman Hazem Qassem said the bombardment of Gaza and the intimidation of innocent people are part of Tel Aviv's atrocities and terrorist behavior. He stressed that Israel will not be able to shatter Palestinians' will and resistance, despite all its terrorist tools and U.S. backing. He said Palestinian people and groups will press ahead with the resistance until the Israeli regime is forced out of the occupied territories. Early on Saturday, Israel hit Gaza, saying the attack targeted Hamas military positions in response to rockets fired from the territory. Our correspondent in Gaza, Ashraf Shannon, says Israel fired at least a dozen rockets into the besieged territory, causing explosions there.
The amount of rockets that were fired by the Israeli regime were very high. At least 12 rockets were fired, and loud explosions were heard all over the Gaza Strip. This Israeli attack is the first time in 1 month, and it's the first time to happen under the leadership of acting Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid. The failure of the Iron Dome interception system to intercept one of the rockets, that's 50% failure. And I think this is a message by resistance groups by firing the rockets to in reaction to the visit by U.S. President Joe Biden, who on the first leg of his trip to the Israeli regime visited one of the factories that manufacture the Iron Dome missile interception system, and this shows you 50% failure of such systems last year during the Sort of Al-Quds battle. The failure almost reached 80%. As more rockets being fired, the failure of the system increases.
The coalition of Bahraini political factions has issued a statement in opposition to participation in any military alliance that involves Israel. The associations in a statement urged Bahrain to stay away from any kind of militarism and conflict in the region. They also expressed opposition to any foreign interference in their country's internal affairs. The statement is issued on the eve of the U.S. President's summit with regional Arab leaders. The U.S. is trying to use the summit to form an anti-Iran security alliance with the participation of Israel. Bahrain's ruling Al-Khalifa regime signed an agreement to normalize ties with Israel in 2020. Yemen's Ansarullah movement has strongly condemned U.S. President Joe Biden's visit to Israel and Saudi Arabia, saying the trips aim to speed up normalization between Tel Aviv and Riyadh. Ansarullah said normalizing ties with Israel is the betrayal to the Palestinian cause and has dangerous consequences. It said Biden's visits serve the U.S. and Israel at the cost of the security and stability in West Asia. The Yemeni movement said the trips are also aimed at targeting freedom and independence of regional countries. The U.S. president is currently in Saudi Arabia for a summit with Arab leaders. On Friday, he met with Saudi King and Crown Prince following visits to the occupied West Bank and Israel. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has dismissed the so-called Jerusalem Declaration signed between the United States and the Israeli regime. In a statement, the movement said the declaration only consolidates Washington's support of Israel's occupation and aggression against the Palestinians and their homeland. Hamas censured Washington for blatantly and unconditionally favoring the Zionist entity and its occupation goals. The resistance movement said the so-called declaration presents more of the same American Zionist terrorism directed against the Palestinian people. On Thursday, President Biden of the United States and Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid signed a joint declaration outlining Washington's support for Israel. U.S. President Joe Biden says he has confronted Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman over the murder of dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
He basically said that he was not personally responsible for it. I indicated I thought he was. He said he was not personally responsible for it, and he took action against those who were responsible. And then I went on to talk more about how that dealing with any opposition to the or criticism of the Saudi administration in other countries was viewed as, to me, a violation of human rights.
Speaking in Jeddah, Biden said he had a good series of meetings with the Saudi leadership. He stressed that significant progress was made on security and economic issues, but human rights is also a, quote, vitally important matter to him. Biden has been under fire for his visit to Saudi Arabia. The visit is seen as a U-turn on his pledge to turn the kingdom into a pariah state over its human rights record. U.S. intelligence says the Saudi crown prince likely ordered the killing of U.S.-based writer Khashoggi in 2018. His fiancée says Biden has the blood of the prince's next victims on his hands. Mike Harris, an editor of the Veterans Today, is with us from Phoenix. Thank you for joining us. So first, let's discuss Biden's visit to Saudi Arabia and the issue of the brutal assassination of Jamal Khashoggi, a U.S.-based writer there. I'm going to just first simply give you a quote of President Biden. He said, "I just made it clear if anything occurs like that again, they will get that response and much more." First of all, what response? And second of all, what happened to that pledge? What happened to the pledge of making Saudi Arabia a pariah state?
Well, Biden is a paper tiger. He's all talk, and he can't implement anything. So nothing is going to happen to Saudi Arabia. Biden is over at Saudi Arabia begging for them to increase their oil production right now. because Biden has another problem at home, and that is the American people are ready to revolt because of the high gasoline and fuel prices. But nothing is going to happen with Khashoggi. Biden, as I said, is a paper tiger. He has no teeth. There's nothing he can do because he needs the Saudis more than the Saudis need him right now. He has no power.
So that basically means now that the U.S. is facing this serious energy crisis at home, then its advocacy of human rights has gone to waste all of a sudden?
Well, the U.S. has never been big with human rights with their so-called allies. Saudi Arabia has been a very strong abuser of human rights for a very long time. So were their other allies. So was Saddam Hussein before they toppled him. He was an abuser of human rights. The war that Iraq had going with Iran for so long was a direct result of U.S. interference in Iraqi and Iranian affairs. The U.S. will support dictators and look the other way for human rights abuses when it plays into the foreign policy goals. That's all. And the foreign policy goals of the U.S. are to acquire the resources of other countries cheaply. That's the only thing that the U.S. establishment cares about right now.
Right. And isn't it a hypocrisy, in your opinion, on the part of the U.S.'s administration? And doesn't it go to show that the U.S. has some double standards when it comes to human rights?
The U.S. is a complete hypocrite when it comes to human rights, including in the USA itself. But there's another fundamental issue going on in Saudi Arabia right now. And Biden was there to stop to interfere with Saudi Arabia joining the BRICS nations. Mm-hmm. If Saudi Arabia and other countries join the BRICS and they're successful with the BRICS, the SWIFT system loses control of the global financial system, and the U.S. is on the issue at play here. That's the real reason. The reason he stopped in Israel on the way there was to get his orders from his Israeli masters. The rabbis and the wizards and the dark forces that control Israel were there to tell Biden what his parameters should be when he goes to talk to the Saudis.
Also, President Biden pledged more military aid for Israel. And again, another killing, the killing of another journalist, Shireen Abu Akleh, went unnoticed and unmentioned. Also, the family members of Shireen Abu Akleh, who wanted a meeting with President Biden, were denied that meeting. And there were some journalists in that joint press conference that occurred after the meeting. They were banned from asking their questions, the journalists who had T-shirts with Shireen Abu Akleh printed on them. What do you think about that?
Well, it's another example of the double standard that the U.S. has. Khashoggi is an important journalist. This new one is not an important journalist. So it just depends on what the U.S. foreign policy goals are. Biden is absolutely a hypocrite. And as I stated, he will take orders from his Israeli masters. Nothing more I could say about that. But the job of being a journalist and really telling the truth is a very dangerous job, particularly in this day and age, because the world is on the verge of great change. And quite frankly, the established system, the bad guys really, are losing. They're losing badly. They're losing in Ukraine. They're losing with the whole BRICS system forming and taking mass. There's a lot of dynamics going on right now that have the global financial system, the Western banking system, the SWIFT system, very nervous. And Biden is in Saudi Arabia to persuade the Saudis not to join the BRICS. That is the biggest part of his whole visit there now. Far more important than getting more oil, and far more important than the murder of Khashoggi.
Mm-hmm. That is true. But one last question I have for you. How do you think American citizens will react to this behavior that Joe Biden exhibited on his trip? We know that Shireen Abu Akleh is a U.S. citizen, and also Jamal Khashoggi was a U.S.-based writer. So what do American nationals think about this?
Well, it just shows the disdain that our government here in the U.S. has for the American people. And it was Hillary Clinton who said a couple years ago, the deplorables. Well, I'm one of the deplorables. These other journalists are among the deplorables. Anyone who tells the truth to power in this country are among the deplorables, and we're not part of their insider club. And they have disdain for us, and the American people have nothing but loathing and fear for the Biden administration. And, and I say fear because the January 6th peaceful protesters that they're claiming was an insurrection was no insurrection. No one was killed. They're really nervous right now. The Washington establishment is scared. They're scared of the American people. They're pushing hard to take the gun rights from the American people, the Second Amendment, which is a God-given right to self-defense. They're pushing hard to take that away from the American people because they are so afraid that when the American people find out the extent of their crimes, look at Hunter Biden, the crimes that are coming out about him, when they find out the extent of these crimes against the American people, the government and the government officials, the elected officials, are afraid the American people are going to use those guns against them. That's why they're pushing so hard to create these false flag shooting incidents, and why they want to disarm the American people and make us powerless, like they did in Australia, where people have no power.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming on. A pleasure to have you on. Mike Harris, editor of Veterans Today, joining us from Phoenix. Tehran has slammed the UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in Iran for hailing the life sentence handed to Iranian citizen Hamid Nouri by a Swedish court. The rights official Kazem Gharibabadi says the rapporteur publicly supported the arbitrary detention and sham trial of Nouri. Gharibabadi says this is extremely disappointing, especially as the ruling was based on charges brought by an anti-Iran terror group. The official says the rapporteur Javid Rahman should have held Swedish authorities to account for gross violations of Nouri's fundamental human rights. Gharibabadi says the UN official proved that he is trying to please Iran's enemies. Nouri was arrested in 2019 over allegations of human rights violations against members of MKO terrorist group. He was sentenced in what Iran calls an unfair trial by an incompetent court. A sizable number of lawmakers blame the West's aggressive foreign policy towards Moscow for the cost of living crisis currently impacting EU citizens. The 27-nation bloc is facing an energy crisis after cutting off oil imports from Russia over the conflict in Ukraine. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
A debate in the European Parliament has heard that 22% of people in the EU are struggling to make ends meet. That's almost 100 million citizens who are counting every cent. Apparently, sending weapons to Ukraine is not the answer.
The best way to deal with the cost of living crisis is to stop prolonging the war. The people of Europe favour peace, even well above punishing Russia.
EU financial markets are in turmoil. There are calls for the introduction of a windfall tax.
Energy prices and food prices are going through the roof. Capitalists make profits by speculating on markets and thereby hurting millions of households.
Members of the public have been talking to us about the current state of the EU's economy.
It's terrifying to see that our free market is like collapsing. All the money that we are going to send to Ukraine, then we will have to need this money, and where we are going to take this money from.
The head of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, has been singled out for criticism in the European Parliament.
We don't know about the increase of cost of living in the European Union, which is just a result of the insane and unsound policies promoted by the European Union since Ursula von der Leyen took office.
There have been calls for greater solidarity between EU member states to deal with the cost of living crisis.
In order to make sure that we are not at the end dividing Europe in those who are able to help and those who have more difficulties.
On sanctions against Russia, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban has said, quote, "Initially I thought that we had only shot ourselves in the foot, but now it is clear that the EU economy has shot itself in the lungs and is gasping for air." Many here agree. Jerome Hughes, the European Parliament, Brussels.
Well, that does it for this edition of World News.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O the Most Merciful.
In the limelight.
In the U.S., the House Committee investigating the Capitol attack announced it would hold its next hearing on Thursday, 21st of July, in prime time. It was not clear whether it would be the summer finale, as once expected. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Luke Broadwater. The piece is titled January 6th panel to dissect Trump's 187 minutes of inaction during riot. In the U.S., the House Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol is planning to return to prime time on Thursday, 21st of July, for what could be the finale of its summer hearing schedule. A session focused on former President Donald J. Trump's 187 minutes of inaction as a mob of his supporters assaulted Congress. The hearing, scheduled for 8 p.m. on Thursday, 21st of July, is expected to give a detailed account of how Donald Trump resisted multiple entreaties from staffers, from lawyers, and even his own family to call off the attack, which raged on for hours in the early afternoon of 6th of January 2021. Representatives Elaine Luria, Democrat of Virginia, and Adam Kinzinger, Republican of Illinois, are expected to play leading roles in the hearing. One witness the panel could hear from is Sarah Matthews, a former White House press aide who resigned in the aftermath of 6th of January. She has told the committee that a tweet Donald Trump sent attacking Vice President Mike Pence while the riot was underway was like pouring gasoline on the fire. Donald Trump had tried unsuccessfully to pressure Mike Pence to reject Congress's official count of electoral votes to confirm Joseph R. Biden Jr. as the president-elect, and was inside the Capitol as rioters breached the building, chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." The committee is also likely to play clips of the testimony of other witnesses who attempted to intervene with Donald Trump during those more than 3 hours, including Pat Cipollone, the White House counsel. The committee has also said it received testimony from Keith Kellogg, a retired lieutenant general who was Mike Pence's national security advisor, about Donald Trump's refusal to condemn the violence as the mob engulfed the Capitol. Keith Kellogg said Ivanka Trump, Mr. Trump's eldest daughter, urged her father at least twice to call off the violence, as did Mark Meadows, the chief of staff, and Kayleigh McEnany, the White House press secretary. The panel has already heard testimony from witnesses about unsuccessful attempts to get Donald Trump to call for peace. Most memorably, the former White House aide, Cassidy Hutchinson, described to the committee how Donald Trump sided with the mob and sympathized with their chants for execution of Mike Pence. The hearing was initially planned to be the last in a series of summer sessions in which the panel would reveal its findings, but the committee has continued to collect new evidence, and lawmakers have hinted that they could add more hearings to the schedule. Among the new wrinkles, the committee is looking into the disappearance of Secret Service text messages from around the time of the January 6 attack. The committee issued a subpoena to the Secret Service on Friday evening, 15th of July, seeking text messages from 5th of January and 6th of January 2021 that were reportedly erased, as well as any after-action reports. The development came after the Inspector General for the Department of Homeland Security, the parent agency of the Secret Service, met with the panel on Friday and told lawmakers that many of the texts were erased as part of a device replacement program, even after the Inspector General had requested them as part of his inquiry into the events of 6th of January 2021. The Secret Service has disputed parts of the Inspector General's findings, saying that data on some phones had been lost as part of a planned 3-month system migration in January of 2021, but none pertinent to the inquiry. The agency said that the project was underway before it received notice from the Inspector General to preserve its data, and that it did not maliciously delete text messages. Representative Jamie Raskin, Democrat of Maryland and a member of the committee, said the panel wants to hear more from the Secret Service to try to get to understand what happened. The committee is absolutely determined to get to the bottom of this and to find all of its missing texts, Jamie Raskin told reporters on Capitol Hill. They are missing, but in the age of high technology, we should not give up. On Friday, 15th of July, the committee also interviewed Patrick Byrne, the former chief executive officer of Overstock.com, who financed some of the legal efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Patrick Byrne was present at what was perhaps the most dramatic meeting of the Trump presidency on 18th of December 2020, in which Michael Flynn, the former National Security Advisor, and Sidney Powell, the pro-Trump lawyer, pressed to seize voting machines and name Ms. Powell as a special counsel to work to overturn the election. Representative Benny Thompson, Democrat of Mississippi and the January 6th committee chairman, said the panel also has also has been discussing what to do about some more high-profile potential witnesses. Virginia Thomas, a political activist who pushed to overturn the 2020 presidential election and the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, is still on the committee's list of witnesses to call, even though she has rebuffed attempts to interview her, Mr. Thompson said. Benny Thompson also told reporters the panel was continuing to discuss, as members have for months, whether it should try to summon Donald Trump and Mike Pence to testify, but lawmakers have not reached a conclusion about how to proceed. The panel believes both men would probably fight attempts to get them to testify, and some lawmakers worry a public battle over Donald Trump's compliance would distract from the actual work of fact-finding. Benny Thompson has previously said the committee has ruled out a subpoena for Mike Pence, citing significant information it had received from two of his aides, Mark Short and Greg Jacob.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Jafar Gonzalez.
Life is passing, life is passing, as the water flowing in the river passes when it seeks the sea. And I, heedlessly, sit on the threshold of my house and stare at the passing of life.
My name is Raul González Bornes. I am from Madrid. I was born in 1950 in an active, combatant, communist, and anti-fascist family. I studied in Ramiro de Mastero School. I received my diploma and then went to university to study technical communication engineering and electronic engineering. I studied engineering till 1968, and I was arrested for anti-fascist activities.
Por mis actividades antifascistas fui detenido.
This was my class when I was 7. At the age of 8, 9, yes, it has changed a lot. It was like small houses before. Indeed, it has changed a lot. This is the entrance of Andalusia. This region is called España Berocelos. Currently, we are passing Costija Flat. We are descending to the sea. A new land with a different culture starts from here, a different idea of life, a different soul, a different soul and mind.
Alma de un pueblo oprimido.
After my release from prison, I started to work in filmmaking. In 1972, I was forced to do my obligatory military service. When I was doing my military service, I was arrested, imprisoned, and tortured. I was imprisoned in the military ward at the Carabanco prison in 1974, a little after the assassination of Carrero Blanco, who was General Franco's prime minister. That is, a year before General Franco's death, I was released from prison.
Después del atentado contra Carrero Blanco y en el año 74, es decir, un año antes de la muerte del general Franco, fui liberado.
That is, sentenced to a year in prison after the court, but I was released a little before the court.
Prácticamente es lo que ya había estado antes del juicio, fui liberado.
Esta escuela tiene un equipo de...
This school had an important basketball team, which was called Student. At the age of 10, we started to play basketball. We gathered here to go to the class, and here we played basketball. Andalusia has a deep soul and spirituality. This soil is so deep. It is land with a people who have majestic feelings. Great regional feelings, great artistic feelings, and great human feelings. It was a mosque before. They've changed it to a church. Flamenco started from here. When a farmer is working on his farm, his tear and song flow on his tongue in the form of flamenco. They stole the history of this land up to the point that people do not know who their ancestors were. There was a statue of General Franco here. The first and second grade students were all in this place. They played music here. We played basketball there, and here we played soccer. Everywhere here was open before, but now they are closed. Yes, it is all closed. Only if one of them knows the real history of this land, he will tear. They collected the Qurans and other sacred books and burned all of them. And now, after 500 years, They still celebrate the anniversary of Granada's conquest every year as if they had done a heroic deed. It was a city whose governor surrendered in order to prevent bloodshed. They gave the city disarmed to some barbarians who did not have any heart and pity. They did not understand any languages except oppression. They had no God except money. It is a lie that they were Christians. They never believed in Christ. They never believed in Christ's message. Franco died and democracy reached Spain, and it was the beginning of tears of great disappointment in me because we saw the new democracy and the former one were the same. The only difference is that the new democracy is shown better. The new democracy came with a better disguise, but with more oppression and dictatorship. I saw most of the people who had fought against fascism and all accepted the new logics. They surprisingly accepted even to join the play they called democracy. This made me so disappointed. I started to feel a kind of absurdity in myself. But they could not make me deal with this system and accept it. This issue caused a kind of isolation and seclusion.
Con lo cual comienza para mí una etapa de marginación.
En español, there are many Spanish words which have Arabic roots, like al-zakia or al-zaytun. It was a time when I felt that I had received a message inviting me to leave Madrid. And some months later, this message of leaving Madrid took me to Granada Mountains for discovering nature. I got familiar with some persons who came here to live. I came here too and lived with them in nature for 4 years. We did not have electricity or gas. We had a primitive life. The house which was located here was a ruin. We asked its owner to let us repair it. We wanted to repair it with logs and stocks, like the other houses here, which are built in a traditional way. Here in nature, we watched the stars at night because there was no electricity. The sky was clear. We could see the passing of the sun and the moon. We saw signs of nature, passing of the seasons, and leaves changing color in the spring. Little by little, I started to think that generally somebody created this process. I started to think about the existence of a creator.
Alguien que lo había creado y empecé a pensar en la posibilidad de la existencia del creador.
I was reading different Bibles, which ended with reading a book by Oscar, titled La Epistola de Profrotium. This book speaks about Jesus Christ in a way that I had never heard throughout my life. Having read the Bible, I found that Christ's message is undoubtedly a divine speech.
El mensaje de Jesús y el mensaje de la palabra divina, sin duda. Y finalmente
Finally, in the early days of 1983, I started a kind of fasting. I was alone. All my friends went for New Year celebrations. They went to see their families. I started to have a kind of fast, which I only drank water. I went to the library and read books. We, five persons who lived together, had a very large library with different books. I found a book about Islam. It was a small book by Sayyid Qutb, titled, What is Islam? It was after 16 days of fasting when I started to read the book.
Un pequeño libro de Sayyid Qutb se llamaba ¿Qué es el Islam? Y cuando comencé a leerlo, que llevaría...
I read that saying prayers five times a day is one of the bases of Islam. A kind of light entered my heart and taught me that this is the way which I should follow. So I accepted Islam and returned to Granada to communicate with Muslims. It was after living here for 4 years, far away from city life, I started to learn Islam's practical precepts, like wudu, ghusl, prayers, and fasting. And this way, I began to follow Islam.
Mi camino por la senda del Islam. Esta es la casa de Pedro.
Here is Pedro's home. He is an intimate friend of mine who became Muslim several years ago.
Se hizo musulmán hace unos años. Bueno, es un hombre de aquí.
This is all his life, what you see here. This is a mystic life from Granada. Well, I visit him whenever I come to Granada because he is a man with a great heart.
Bueno, siempre que vengo a Granada vengo a verle, ¿no? Porque es un hombre de un gran corazón. Con mi
finding God and converting to Islam was a critical moment in my life. Before becoming a Muslim, I can say I was following my survival. But after I converted to Islam, a substantial change happened. All events in my life were in front of my eyes, and the outlook of my life started to appear bright.
Se comienza a aclarar.
I remember the first verse of the Quran I memorized. It was, verily, in the remembrance of Allah do hearts find rest. Actually, I should explain how I reached Islam. This Quranic verse indicated this stage of my life because all happened to me was a journey to find tranquility in my heart. I passed a very ordinary stage. Actually, I started to observe some Islamic precepts like prayer and fasting. And as a result, I understood the meaning of Islam and placed it inside my heart. Then, I started to build my surrounding according to God. We are going to Arenas de San Peter, which is a small village. It is about 120 kilometers south of Madrid. Maria Tavajo and Agustin Novis live there. This husband and wife are translators and writers. They have translated most of Henry Corman's books. They have a very deep and mystic view about life. Agustin has some works, one of which is a criticism of development. In my opinion, it is an amazing book. When I found God and believed in Him, the conditions changed as well, especially when I became a Muslim, a series of new role models appeared to me with obvious behavior and conduct, like Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. And after a while, characters like Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein, and other imams who were from Prophet Muhammad's family.
El ejemplo y la actitud que ellos nos han transmitido con sus vidas y con sus enseñanzas, personas como, en primer lugar, por supuesto,
and even contemporary characters that are our role models, seriously, with their deeds and conducts, like Imam Khomeini.
De guía y revolucionario que...
Firstly, it is not for his role as a leader of an effective revolution in the contemporary era, but substantially for his personal deeds, lifestyle, reactions, and thoughts.
Por su, la profundidad de su reflexión personal y de su pensamiento.
Vale, tafsir suri.
Has traducido.
Descubrimiento del Islam.
After I knew Islam and accepted it as an ideology, little by little I discovered some new aspects believed by Islamic thoughts. One of these aspects is a socio-political aspect, which is supported by Islamic thought.
La dimensión social y política que la creencia islámica implica. Digamos, el Islam me va a permitir.
Islam gave me the opportunity to restore this aspect of life. This was the obsession I had about the social and political issues. This was part of a deeper attitude towards the realities themselves. For example, it was part of this realization that relationship with God affects the person himself and helps reform his personality.
Profundo de la realidad misma, es decir, como parte de una comprensión de que.
This helped me communicate with people. Converting to Islam gradually restored all periods of time when I lost for bad events. Those times, my major concern was social and political struggles, as well as trying to change a society into an ideal social system and freedom. Moreover, I had lost my interest in politics because there was no democracy in the country. Studying the current democracy showed that it was not a step forward to social justice and freedom. Reaching Islam did not just require restoring what you had lost, that is, trying to be happy or enhancing human knowledge. Additionally, it has another important aspect, which requires believing in one single God and creator for everything.
Sino que además va a aportarle esa dimensión de.
He is the creator who requires us to have social commitment. This is for defending the religion, justice, and social equity for humans.
Defensa de la igualdad social de los seres humanos. El hecho de que como el mismo.
Actually, this verse of the Quran, which says, how many a small company has overcome a large company by permission of Allah, is a source of inspiration for contemporary humans. Attention is attracted towards this idea that quantity is not the only important thing. Quantity, which is the main pillar of this civilization, is not of importance. Personal quality is important. The verse says that the individual is the center of attention. It allows the person to review himself, restore his self-assurance, and know his value.
Sobre la cuestión de la cantidad, no sobre el asunto sobre el que está fundamentada la.
There are some verses in the Quran in which God says, for example, when a person saves another, he saves the whole of humanity, and when a person kills a soul, he kills all of humanity. These verses give one the permission to react. They show the significance of an individual alone in this society which ruins the humanity of humans.
Esta sociedad cosificadora. En ese sentido.
For example, the Islamic resistance in Lebanon is so promising. It has a message which is so promising for humanity, both for believers and non-believers, although its audience is the oppressed.
Muy esperanzadora la humanidad, tanto creyente como no creyente.
The reason is that the main cause of change is not the quantity of humans. The number of people in a revolution is not important, but their self-esteem. It is not necessary that a large number of people be in any movement to change a society in a positive way, but fundamentally, what we need is their high quality of character.
la que produce esa transformación social.
Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah is a good example of Islamic leadership. Although he's an international leader, he's at the forefront of defending his people. His values are more than defending his people, that is, defending the values which save people from deadlock by his life and his family's life. He is not a leader who manages his forces sitting at a desk. He leads this movement by his life and his family's life, to the extent that his son was martyred.
La sangre de uno de sus hijos en la lucha por sus ideales. Sayyid Nasrallah se está convirtiendo.
Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah became an international character, especially after Israel's imposed war in the summer of 2006. He is a valuable example of a person who is referred by other people for opposing oppression. On one hand, he is so strong against homicide, oppression, state terrorism, and illegal occupation of lands. On the other hand, he is very flexible and lenient, who embraces all people. No one is excluded. No one of those who can take part in this battle, or at least those who are ready to talk about their ideology. Life is passing, life is passing, and beautiful dreams and your wishes are forgotten. Fame disappears. You'll see none of your ambitions remain, even not a memory.
In the limelight.
In the United States, the House Select Committee that is investigating last year's riot at the U.S. Capitol said on Saturday, 9th of July, that testimony it received from former White House counsel Pat Cipollone last week corroborated key elements of testimony that former top White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson provided to the panel last month. The article you're about to hear has been written by Newsweek journalist Xander Landon. The article was published by Newsweek and is titled Cipollone Corroborated Key Elements of Hutchinson's Testimony. In the United States, the House Select Committee that is investigating last year's riot at the U.S. Capitol said on Saturday, 9th of July, that testimony it received from former White House counsel Pat Cipollone last week corroborated key elements of testimony that former top White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson provided to the panel last month. During a public hearing, Cassidy Hutchinson claimed that former President Donald Trump was aware that some of his supporters were armed during his rally on 6th of January 2021. But he didn't care since they weren't there to hurt him. In addition, she alleged that Donald Trump tried to grab the steering wheel of the presidential limousine when he was told he couldn't join his supporters at the Capitol during the deadly insurrection on 6th of January. After Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony, the committee subpoenaed Pat Cipollone to testify, which he did in a closed-door meeting on Friday. CNN reported on Saturday, 9th of July, that during the meeting, Cipollone invoked executive privilege when responding to some questions from the panel. However, in a statement, Tim Mulvey, a spokesperson for the committee, said there were no agreements during the interview to limit questioning in accordance with executive privilege. In our interview with Mr. Cipollone, the committee received critical testimony on nearly every major topic in its investigation, reinforcing key points regarding Donald Trump's misconduct and providing highly relevant new information that will play a central role in its upcoming hearings. Tim Mulvey said, according to CNN, this includes information demonstrating Donald Trump's supreme dereliction of duty. The testimony also corroborated key elements of Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony. Allegations of some pre-interview agreement to limit Pat Cipollone's testimony are completely false. Newsweek has reached out to Donald Trump's press office for comment. During an interview on NBC's Meet the Press on Sunday, Representative Stephanie Murphy, a Democrat from Florida and a member of the January 6th House panel, said that during the interview, Cipollone claimed privilege on conversations that related to the advice he provided directly to the former president or conversations with the former president. But I think we still got a lot of relevant information from him, and it provides us another perspective on what was happening in the White House in those weeks running up to 6th of January 2021 that were so critically important, she said.